I'm going to review a little bit of what we've been, because I want to kind of tag on to some of those and just begin to open it up a little bit more this morning. So I want to explain it in such a way that we can all be in the same place. And my hope is that by the end of this, your passion and your desire for God will be increased. My hope is that your understanding of what's available will be increased. And my hope is that you'll understand this, the magnificence of what's been given to us. We've learned in the last few weeks that the love, acceptance, and grace were not there to encourage evil, but rather to cause us to mature. To cause us to come into a maturity in Christ. To cause us to come into a maturity of the Word. Because all those things happen and all those things are released so that you can fulfill the call of God in your life. Some people have used it as an excuse to sin, but it was never intended as those things. It was always intended as something that caused us to grow up in Him. And we talked about, out of 1 Corinthians 13, that famous love chapter. Love is good, love is patient, love is kind. All those things that you got posted on a refrigerator or your bathroom wall, mirror, or all those other places that you might put it. But see, when we look at that, if we look at that and just recite it, we miss the point. If we look at that and think that I'm going to achieve all those things in my own strength, we've missed the point. Because we're not going to be able to accomplish that just in our own strength. In other words, that's going to take something that's a transformation process in each and every one of us. Now, some of us have the capacity to be much better in our natural soul than others. Probably most of you have capacity to be better in your soul than me. But it's not just those things. See, it's what God does in us. It's more than our self-will. It's an act of engaging with the Lord. It's something that's actively looking for the interests of others more than ourself. See, true love looks to engage the other person. True love looks to engage someone else and address their need even before your own need. When we come together, well, oftentimes when we come together in marriage, let's do it this way. When we come together in marriage, we forget, or maybe when we first come, we didn't even understand or didn't even know that, you know, it was about somebody besides ourselves. We did it because she looks good. We did it because she makes me feel good. We did it because she's all into me. I got the right response. We do all those things, but see, that's never, ever the reason for true love. Now, that can be a formula for lust, but it's not a true love. But what we need to understand is that what God has called us to do is to love one another and look to serve one another, not out of our own strength, but out of His. And when two people come together and they're looking to serve one another out of God's strength and looking to Him to be the mediator, to Him to be the action in between, that one, He's the sufficiency. And when we get our sufficiency from Him instead of one another, now we have a formula for love. If my whole need, if all I'm doing is trying to meet my need through my spouse, she can never fulfill that. It's not her job to make me happy. Now, there are certain things she can do that make me happy, but it's not her job to make me happy. Happiness is my choice. Whether she's treating me good or bad, she never treats me bad, but if she's treating me good or bad, it's my choice how do I respond. It's my understanding, my thought is how I respond. So why am I saying all this? Because, see, our belief system determines what goes on in our life. Our belief system will determine the nature of our relationships. Our belief system will determine the quality of our relationships. Our belief system will determine the quality of our life and how close we get to fulfilling our ultimate destiny. Got quiet in this Presbyterian church. Let's back up here, and I didn't quote it last week, but it's actually, I read it. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 33. I read it immediately after later that day, the same day, and I was like, man, that just says what I was really trying to say. And it says, just as I also please all men in all things, seeking not my own profit, but the profit of the many, that they may be saved. See, this is the nature of love. Well, we're seeking not our own profit, but the profit of the many. The profit of somebody else besides yourself. Because that's what happens when we begin to walk and carry out the mission of God in our life. And the mission of God for your life may be to minister to thousands, or it may be to minister to just that one certain stubborn person. I don't know. Whatever it is, we know we can trust Him in it. And you'll know at the end whether you fulfilled it or not. Okay. The other thing we talked about is that the actions of love are looking beyond your own need. It takes more than self-will. I can make a determination to love you with everything within me. But if it's just coming out of my self-will, as soon as you step on something that's way too, then me and you got an issue. In other words, I can push it to a point, and I can let you push me to a point. But at a certain point, everyone has their snapping point. But see, that's not the case when we engage the Lord. That's not the case when we engage what He's set up for us. That's not the case when we're fully immersed and our whole identity comes from Him. Because when our identity is coming from Him, when our understanding is coming from Him, when we're bathed in this truth, when we've been sanctified by His truth, then there's no place for someone else to put me in that place. When I begin to understand that I am an heir and not just a servant in the house. It's one of the things we talked about last week. Becoming an heir. See, because the heir understands that his supply comes from the King. But the servant in the house is only looking to what can I do? Well, how is my performance going to qualify me for what I'm looking for? If we approach God with a servant, just as a slave mentality, if we approach Him with a slave mentality, then we're always looking to try to earn our position with Him. We're always looking to try to earn our place with Him. And we're always fearful that if I didn't do it right yesterday, I don't have any access today. An heir knows he's qualified. An heir doesn't even question whether or not he's loved. An heir just steps in and assumes he's loved. When we come to Christ, we have that same place because He's declared that we are sons and daughters in His kingdom. We can come in to a place called love. We can come into and enter into His presence because He's already qualified us. So I know that LaRue's been speaking about entering in. I have two in some, not in the same level or ways, but he's been speaking about entering in. But I want to qualify something for you. It's not an event. It's a lifestyle. It's not something you do in the morning and then you take that cap off and you go do what you want to do. It's not something that happens once in a while. It's something that you engage continually throughout the day. Because if you approach it that way, now it gives you an opportunity to be able to interface with the one who can make the difference in your life. It's not something that we do to feel good. It's something that we do to change the core beliefs in our heart. The result of that is we become more like Christ. So let me just refresh you from what we did a little bit ago, a couple of weeks ago. Why we enter in. Number one, it increases our faith. We've already done these before, so I'm just reminding you today. Number two, prepares us to face uncertain times, an uncertain future. Number three, makes us aware of how personal He is. Number four, it teaches us to be totally dependent upon Him. Number five, it empowers us to experience His fullness. Number six, teaches us how to be part of His family. Number seven, it creates confidence for godly risks. Number eight, creates opportunity for change. Number nine is what He to praise and honor Him, true and sincere honor to Him. When somebody goes way out of their way to make something possible and you ignore it, then there's no honor. But if you engage it, that's an honor. And number 10, it makes the Word come alive in us. So I want to speak about these things, this confidence for godly risks and this opportunity, especially the opportunity for change. Change creates an opportunity for change. Any of you go to see Todd White this weekend? No? Yes? Yeah, you got to see Mario. That's okay. I would have loved to, but I had other engagements, so I couldn't go. But see, Todd White was one of the people. Is basically when you watch him, you see a man who's on fire. A man who desires to do what God has placed in front of him. A man who desires and is not afraid to take godly risk. There's something extraordinary about that because, see, there's nothing attractive about just being normal. Okay? What attracts people to Him is because He's not normal. He is not normal. He doesn't do things like most people do. But why is that possible for Him? Because somewhere, somehow, He got into enough of God that it changed part of His belief system. Because He just believes that God's going to do what He said He would do. God does do what He said He's going to do. And see, that's what we're talking about today, is engaging the God who will do what He said He's going to do. We engage Him by engaging our faith. We engage Him by engaging our belief system and allowing our belief system to be based in truth. What's the difference between based in truth? Well, let me ask you. What happens if you get questioned by your boss? What happens if you get confronted by an angry spouse? What happens if someone disappoints or hurts you? See, whatever happens next is what comes out of your belief system. You know, you turn a report in to your boss And you're proud of that report. You think you've got it nailed. And he says, this is insufficient. Now, you've got a choice of responses. You can get mad. You can throw a tantrum. You can go run to the bathroom and puke. You can go to the snack bar and eat a whole bunch of cookies and cake. Or you can engage the possibility for growth and maturity. See, if we feel unworthy, we'll do the first things. If we know that we're worthy and we know that we're good in His sight, in God's sight, then we can engage the moment for change. I met a man the other day who got laid off. And you know what happens when most people get laid off? I mean, it's doom, it's gloom, it's all the sadness, all the why me, and all the pain, and we begin to move into fear and all those things. And he just thanked them. He said, thank you for setting me free. Thank you for setting me free. Why? Because he had a different mindset. He had a different belief because he was already working on something on the side and he really didn't know what he should do next. And so this gave him an opportunity to go explore it. So instead of the normal feelings that you would have in that situation, he was just grateful. Hey, it clarified my options real quick. I don't have to be fearful. I can just engage my other opportunity. He engaged his opportunity. But see, all that was predicated on his belief system had already been changed. His belief system wasn't holding that this job is the only thing that's my provision. What we do, our emotions are dictated by what we believe. Wrong beliefs create wrong thoughts. Wrong thoughts create wrong emotions. Wrong emotions will create wrong motivations and wrong actions. God is looking to address it right at the root. Because as he adds us to his truth and adds his truth to us, as he brings us into a place of truth in our belief system, as our belief system is exposed to truth, then our response becomes different. That's why we enter in, because where else are you going to get the model for a godly response? There's not many models for godly responses around us. Even some of the people that we see and we lift them up in ministry, the reality is that in their whole life, they're really maybe not a whole lot of godly response. We don't know everybody's motivation for the things that they do. There are some things that I can do that would make me look good in your eyes, but if I'm doing it out of a wrong motivation, it's still wrong in God's eyes. If I'm doing it to make me look good, then I'm missing the point. God has this awesome place that He wants to set everybody into, and that's a place where there's absolute faith in His Word and His truth. See, Jesus is the only one who's ever had his belief system wholly and completely right. Hebrews 4:15 tells us that he was tempted as we are and yet was without sin. See, this belief system being right is not just about having good responses. Our belief system is being right is about enabling us to fulfill what God has called us to do, giving us the power and authority to step into where we're called to be. Let me make it a little clearer. How many have looked at Galatians 5, where it lists off all the fruits of the Spirit? Instead of seeing it as a fruit of the Spirit, you see it as a to-do list. This is what I got to do. This is what I got to look like. This is what I got to produce. This is what I got to make happen, because this is what's going to make me look good for all those people when we come to church. See, it was never supposed to be a to-do list. It's the product of truth in your life. It's the product of truth being in your heart and being released. Let me carry the exercise a little further. How many know that when Jesus went to the cross, that was really, really a bad day? That was a bad, bad day. Okay? Number one, he's falsely accused. He's mocked. He's scorned. He's despised. He's rejected. He's tossed around like some object from one prefect to another. He's sent all over the place. He's beaten almost to death. He's dragged out of the city and cast out of the gates of the city and dragged to the top of a hill. And there at the very end of his strength, he's posted up on a cross and scorned and mocked and shamed. And at the very end of his strength, what is it he's about doing? What is he doing in those moments? He's forgiving the people. All of them. Even the ones who put him up here. He's pardoning the thief who's next to him. And he's looking out for his mom's needs. And he's giving his spirit over to his father. See, he didn't have the normal responses. He could have been angry. He could have been upset. He could have been cussing out everybody and everywhere. He could have been railing on them and beating on them. And he could have been making a verbal blast when he was led off to Herod. He could have been just saying, dude, you guys are insane. What do you have to say for yourself? Man, he could have gone off on them. Maybe we would have gone off on them. What do you mean? Locking me up. What do you mean beating me? What do you mean doing this? What do you mean you're going to choose Barabbas over me? You chose? Seriously? Do you know what Barabbas did? And you're going to choose him over me? I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. Barabbas, he's a murderer. He's an insurrectionist, and you're going to put me on the cross? Father, I just quit. I've had enough of these people. He could have done all those things. Instead, he forgave. Instead, he pardoned. Instead, he looked after the interests of his mom. He didn't engage. He didn't engage. I was like, why? Because his belief system was in what his father had asked him to do. His belief system was in alignment with truth. And he recognized it doesn't matter what these people are saying, what they are doing. Those things don't change me. Those things say something about them, but it doesn't say something about me. Those things aren't part of what I need to worry about right now because I have a mission with the Father. See, we're not going to get there through our self-effort and our self-will. We can get there by allowing the call of God in our life and the understanding and the truth of God in our life to change us in a way that we can understand. To change us into the image that He has for us. But we don't get there just in our own strength. We don't love enough to pour ourselves out that way. Without the passion of God in our heart. He had his belief system correct. He had his belief system lined up. And because his belief system was correct, because he was believing and standing in truth, it didn't matter what was in front of him. It didn't matter what was going on, what others did to him. He was able to be free of those things. Because what does it say in Hebrews 12:2? Hebrews 12:2 tells us that for the joy set before him, he despised the shame and endured the cross. What else does it tell us? Is it the next step in that was that he came and he sat down at the right hand of the Father. He overcame. He overcame. By despising those things, by not looking to those things, by not being controlled by those things. See, when we have our thoughts lined up, we're no longer controlled by our environment. We're no longer controlled by other people around us. We're able to walk out what God has. That's the difference. Part of what you see in Todd is he's learned not to be controlled by the environment or what other people think. And because because those things no longer have ownership over him, he's able to do what he needs to do. Now, I'm not saying that we all have to be Todd White. That's it. Every one of us has a unique call and destiny, and your unique call and destiny is just as important as his. My point is that all of us, to do get to where we're supposed to be, we need to allow the Word of God and the truth of God to inhabit our hearts to such a degree that it's more true and more important than what someone else thinks. Than what someone else does. See, sometimes other people can do something to us and we get all concerned and we get all up in how wronged we are. And you know what? What they did might be unjust. But if that's the only thing we see, we don't mature. We don't graduate. We don't overcome. What someone else does can never control you. The real you you're intended to be. They may do something that's harmful and hurtful, but you can maintain your joy. You can maintain your peace. Not out of just a sheer, I'm going to get through this. And I've done it that way. I've had people tell me stuff and I'm thinking, I'm going to get through this. But you know, when your understanding of who you are in Christ increases, those things don't control you anymore. I don't have to manufacture it out of my own strength. I can engage it out of the strength of the Lord. There's a grace that comes for us. The Lord said, come to me, Matthew 11:28. Come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Learn of me, for I am meek and humble of heart, or gentle and humble of heart. Why did he say that? He's tying rest together with being gentle and humble of heart. Because for you to truly enter into the rest, you're going to have to cease from your own works. For you to truly enter into the rest, you're going to have to recognize a place called humility. Because humility attracts the grace of God. James 4:6 tells us that he's opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. When he's opposing the proud and he's giving grace to the humble, there's something being unlocked. If we'll humble ourselves and no longer stand in the pride of our you know, that's what, especially men, pride gets us in trouble. It just does. Pride gets all of us in trouble. But it's the humility of God that will attract the grace that will actually unlock the situation for you. Our pride says, oh, I can do this on my own strength. Grace says, I can do this in His strength. Very different. Romans 5:17 tells us that when we receive the abundance of grace and the gift of righteousness, that's what qualifies us to reign in this present world. It means we overcome. It means that we're the owner of this opportunity. That what someone else says or does no longer controls our destiny, but our destiny comes out of the very throne room of God. It is enabled and empowered by the grace that we learn to receive. And when we receive this grace, that's what brings us into the rest. You see, rest is not desisting from our own works. Rest is engaging the righteousness of God through grace. Engaging the righteousness of God through grace. That's the real nature of rest. Rest isn't just ceasing from my own works or ceasing from my own belief. How many know that it's better to have a target that you're going to rather than just you're avoiding a target? If you're actually shooting at something, if I'm shooting at something, I can hit it. If I'm just avoiding something, that doesn't leave me much direction, does it? That just tells me one point out of all the 360 degrees of points that I don't want to go to. That's not a direction. That's not a vision. That's not establishing something over your life. But when you're going towards something, what we're going toward is the righteousness of God. What we're going to is the righteousness of God, and we gauge that by the grace. Because grace empowers us to fulfill the Father's will. Grace empowers us to get to the place of destiny. We do that by putting truth into our hearts. The Word says we're sanctified. John 17:17, we're sanctified by His truth, and His Word is truth. See, when our heart is sanctified, Christ exemplified what it means to have a heart that is sanctified by truth. When we, in Hebrews 3, it talks about they were not able to enter into the rest because of their unbelief. It finishes up that chapter. It starts with Jesus Christ being the high priest of our confession. And it ends with, it explains that the God was not happy with Israel because of their unbelief. Let me throw a thought out there. Unbelief is not a void. It's not a vacuum. We tend to equate unbelief with being a vacuum of faith. But it's not. Unbelief is wrong believing. I can't just not believe. When we're challenged to have faith, when we're challenged to believe, we're specifically told to believe in Him whom the Father has sent. Because the reality is, if we're in unbelief, we're believing something, we're just not believing truth. It's not a vacuum. It's not an absence. To have unbelief is simply to believe wrongly. Kind of simplifies it, doesn't it? But on the other hand, it also opens up another question. If unbelief is believing wrongly, then there's a whole lot more things that represent unbelief than what I thought. If it doesn't line up with what God's plan and purpose, His rhema and His written word, the rhema and the logos, then it amounts to unbelief. He has a plan, a purpose, and a destiny, but it can only be revealed in faith, which is the belief of truth. A belief in truth that may or may not be in front of you yet, but a belief in truth. Where was I going with, there was somewhere I was going with that. When God has this desire for our hearts, and He wants to convey it, He has to convey in truth. And so when we receive, for us to receive, we need to receive in truth. And that's where grace and righteousness, see, that's what righteousness is simply right standing with God. And so when we're engaging righteousness, now we're engaging ultimately His truth. Like I said earlier, Hebrews 4:15 tells us that He was tempted in all the same ways as that we are, but yet without sin. And because of that, because He has this identification with us, He's already qualified to engage us and bring us into the throne of grace. And thereby we're given grace and help, mercy and grace to help in our time of need. It's a process of establishing His righteousness in our thought, His righteousness in our believing, so that all the wrong beliefs are purged out. And when the wrong beliefs are purged out, then the result is that you're going to look and act like Christ. Is this possible? Yes. See, Jesus modeled what it meant to be sanctified by truth. He modeled what it meant to be conformed with truth. See, works, let me qualify this way. Works, when we're in our own works, we're trying to conform ourselves to His truth. I am trying to conform to that truth. But when I'm in grace, truth conforms me to the image of God. Truth conforms me through grace. It's no longer me doing it. It's not my effort doing it. Because if it's my effort doing it, then I have to maintain it. When it's my effort doing it, I have to complete it. And I have to stay with it. You know what? If I just get up here and I just put on a front, then as soon as I walk away from the pulpit, then that front disappears. You can walk up on me and you go, whoa, Pastor Chuck, that's an attitude. But when we enter into His grace is there to complete the matter for you. It's no longer about us having to do it in our own strength. It's about what He's doing in your life. All He looks for is surrender. There was a lady, I don't know if I talked about this, but a lady who was wearing a t-shirt that just said surrender. But there were three letters that were highlighted in surrender. And it was U-R-N. Now, one person saw that and equated it to run, but I looked at it and said, you are in. I'm in by my surrender. I'm in. I have my entrance into the interface with God, into this place with God, by my surrender. I'm into His truth by my surrender. All He's looking for is my surrender, because out of that surrender, I can engage Him. I mean, see, our emotional response is dictated by our interpretation of an event. Our interpretation may or may not have truth in it. If somebody violates you, and your interpretation of that is that I am now unworthy, I'm unclean, I'm unfit, that belief system will control a lot of what you do. In my case, it made me so self-conscious about being in front of a group of people that if I simply walked across whatever it is that you walk, basically where all the people, all the stands for baseball, because we used to coach baseball and we used to do all those things. But if I had to walk through the stands, I would feel violated. I would feel violated and shamed. And I didn't know why. I just knew that I couldn't stand in front of a group of people without feeling violated and shamed. And it came from an incident where I was violated. But the interesting thing about it is that when the Lord began to explore that moment with me and He began to show me His truth in that moment, it set me free. I can tell you for sure, I feel no violation, no shame standing in front of you today. I enjoy this thing now. There was no way I could have done that at one point in time in my life. All He simply did in that moment was to show me how much He valued me in spite of that moment. That it didn't change how He looked at me. I didn't need to rethink the event. I simply have a new interpretation of the result of the event. My interpretation now is that my Father loves me in spite of what happened. It wasn't necessary to change the event or forget the event. If I try to just forget the event, I will still be guided by that belief system. What He changed was the belief. When He changed the belief, it set me free. If we allow that process to happen, whenever we feel a negative emotion, if there's something that comes up in our life, we have to recognize that it didn't just come most of the time from this situation. It comes from something that you believe. Otherwise, if I say, well, you know, it only can happen because this situation happened or that person did this. Well, that means that other person has all the authority in your life. We don't have to allow that. We allow God's truth to determine how we respond. We allow His truth to reinterpret the event. And out of that, we can stand in freedom. Now I'm no longer controlled by what someone else thought or did. I have a manifestation of truth in my heart. I have a breakthrough really and released in my heart. And sometimes your breakthrough will be the thing that releases their breakthrough. Why? Because you can move in forgiveness. You can move in intercession for them, and that intercession will change them. Your forgiveness will give them an opportunity to go, how did he do that? He wants us to recognize it's not just about wrong emotions. It's also about establishing right beliefs and right order in our life. A minute ago, I told you that Galatians 5 wasn't just a to-do list. Well, think about it. What happened with Jesus? What was his example? The woman at the well. Here's a woman who's out there at the well by herself. John 4, if you want to look it up. She's out there at the well by herself. She's out there at the well by herself for a reason, because all the other women, they shunned her. They weren't with her. No one goes to the well in those days and times by themselves unless they had to. Otherwise, they would go in groups so that they could have some measure of protection from whoever else might be hanging out at the well. And so there was a reason. See, she was being rejected and cast out by all the others who were around her. And yet, what does Jesus do? He engages her. Instead of putting shame and condemnation on her like all the rest had, he engages her in love. He begins to reveal her true identity. And because he reveals her true identity, what happens in her? Her life changes, because a woman who is basically a harlot is now being changed and transformed into the evangelist she was called to be. And she goes back to the city and said, hey, there's a man who told me everything about me. His response came out of a place of truth, not only for himself, but truth for her. He released truth. See, now he's able to walk in the fullness of the Spirit of the Lord. He's walking in the fullness of the Spirit, of the gifts of the Spirit and the fruit of the Spirit, because he engaged God's heart and belief. What about the woman who was caught in adultery? She's surrounded by a crowd. She's surrounded by a crowd of people who are angry, a mob. And you know, when a mob gets together, the bigger the group of people that get together in a mob like that, the lower the IQ gets. And what happens is they got the rocks in their hand. They're ready to stone her. They're going to take vengeance on her. Now, the reality is, in those situations, that's not something you get in the way of. Yet here's Jesus. Gentle. Gentle Jesus. Humble of heart. And he stands in the way in between all those people, that mob, and the woman. And he begins to point out, he who is without sin, cast the first stone. Great courage came forth. Great courage came forth. But also freedom. Freedom for her, because she, seeing rather than being stoned, rather than her life ending in those moments, she was set free and given the opportunity to not sin anymore. But not only that, all those men who had been surrounding her, the mob that had been there, were giving an opportunity to examine their own heart and see past the mob mentality, see past the anger of the moment, and to see the condition of their own heart. He released compassion for both. That's patience, self-control, being manifested. Love, being manifested. Joy, being released. When Lazarus was passing away, he was sick, and Jesus waited a couple more days. No one understood. But see, he knew things that they didn't know. And he knew something that they couldn't know because he explained it when he got to Mary and Martha. He said, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. And because he was the resurrection and the life, rather than being cast down and in grief and angry over what was lost or what was not yet done and all those things that everyone else there was engaged in, Mary was in unbelief. They were angry. They were in grief. All the Jews that were there were in grief and unbelief. And sometimes we teach, well, when somebody's in unbelief, when we got to get them out so that we can do our miracle. That's not what Jesus did. What did he do? He stood in front of the stone and said, somebody roll away that stone because Lazarus is coming out. Hey, Lazarus. You know why I said Lazarus? Because if he didn't address who it was, all of them might have come out. So he had to be specific. Lazarus, you, the one who died 4 days ago. Not you that died 50 years ago. I want you to die 4 days ago. Come out. Now, is that something we can do in our own strength? If our own good behavior... Those things don't come from our own strength and our own good behavior. Those things come from having a belief system that knows who God is. Having a belief system that is centered in who, and the faith that stays with that thought of who God is in you. Jesus didn't have any doubt. When he stood in front of the group, the angry mob, he could have been stoned with the girl. Maybe for some people, that's why it would be exactly what happened if they'd got in the middle of that. I'm examining my own heart. In light of these things. Because I find that my own heart doesn't line up in all these things. I want to be what God's called me to be. Without fear. Without doubt. Without wrong thinking. So when he says go, you go. When he says stay, you stay. When he says speak to that mountain, it moves. So that when he says call Lazarus forth, I can step forward and call Lazarus forth. When he says pray for those blind eyes, I have a full expectation and the manifestation of them being healed. so that when somebody comes to me and they're accusing me and calling me names and all those other things, I don't respond out of the flesh. I can just respond to them out of the love and intercession of God for their heart. There is nothing in me that can grow a man's arm out. To see something that was not there become there. To see a back that was deficient become whole. There's nothing in us, any of us, that in our good behavior is not going to change those things. But when we stand in front of the blind, the lame, the crippled, the devil, those who have the devil in them, we want to know we're standing with Christ and His truth, His life, the resurrection, the one who is the resurrection and the life. We want to know that He's in us. As we speak, He's being released. That means I need to change. My belief system is changing because I'm imploring Him for His grace to change. I'm imploring Him for His grace for the truth to conform my heart. I want to see the fullness of His revival being made manifest. Revival is not a place. It's a person. For me, revival is also a destiny. We only get there by allowing His change in our heart. My belief system has to change. When I respond differently, I'm not saying and not authorizing others' bad behavior. What I'm saying is that their bad behavior no longer has to control me. There are things I can do in my own natural flesh. But the things that I know God wants to do can never be accomplished by flesh. They have to be accomplished by Spirit. That means I have to believe what He said we can believe. Amen.